Seriously, who's blowing up my phone?
Oh, yeah. Powerball.
Big news. Powerball now draws 3 days a week. Mondays, Wednesdays, and Saturdays. Play now. Please play responsibly. Must be 18 years or older to purchase player claim.
Good morning, Vikings fans. This is Morning Joe's, brought to you by our friends at manscaped.com. It is almost Halloween, and it's almost No Shave November, so if you want to prep for that and avoid ingrown hairs in the worst possible place, go to manscaped.com. And use our discount code MORNINGJOES, that's all one word, MORNINGJOES, you get 20% off and a free shipping on your next or first order. Just in time for No Shave November, take care of your pumpkins, I think was the copy they wanted me to read, but I couldn't find it, so I ad-libbed. I'm your host, for now, Joe Johnson, owner of PurplePTSD.com, VikingsTerritory.com. And purpleterritoryradio.com. We also have a new Minnesota Wild site launching in the next couple weeks called miniice.com, and we're going to be looking at launching a Minnesota Gophers website called Gophers Territory in the next couple months as well. So, you know, got that going for us. I'm here with, as always, Mr. Joe Olberly. How you doing, man? They were, and then I got manscaped, and then they fell off, and so I might be a little an octave higher than usual. Yeah.
Okay, so that's pretty cool as well.
I figured we should diversify our portfolio as. The Vikings are terrible, and I don't want to talk about them for a living anymore. I'm kidding, but I figured, you know, the Gopher. I'm not okay. So I used to be a really big hockey fan. I would even say that it was on par with the Vikings. But and I cringe when I say this still, just because of the way things were back when I was in high school. I grew up a Red Wings fan, which I used to get a ton of shit for. Because they were essentially the Yankees of the NHL before the salary cap was implemented, and those were the best days ever. Not so much because they basically had an all-star team, but because those games between the Red Wings and the Colorado Avalanche when they were in the same conference were the best hockey ever. It was just 2 years in a row they had that Patrick Waugh versus Chris Osgood or Mike Vernon skating full speed at each other and just – fighting in the middle or like in between the blue lines. It was great hockey. I will say that I'm not a front runner or a fair weather fan, because if I was, I wouldn't be a Vikings fan. But the last game I remember going to for the North Stars was against the Red Wings, and Sergei Fedorov had a hat trick, and I just thought he was the coolest person on the planet. So like your story before we started the show, Mr. Olberly, I used to wear a Fedorov Olympic hockey jersey from Russia, obviously, and I used to get yelled at constantly by random people calling me like I was a communist, basically. Like I was walking around with a hammer and sickle and supporting Marxist Leninism.
CCCP.
Yeah, the good old days.
Yep.
Anyway, how are you handling the season? I mean, we talked last week, obviously. And I'm doing like 10 different shows now, and so they all blend together, especially when I'm snorting hydroxychloroquine in between each episode.
Nice.
But I remember saying before the Seahawks game, imagine if they did win this game. Wouldn't that be amazing what would happen? And then I remember during the game thinking, oh my God, they might do it. And I thought it was such a left field shot that I said, wouldn't it be amazing if that happened, as if it was like some Super Bowl aspiration. And then last week it was almost the reverse of that. Imagine how bad things would be if they lost to the Falcons, assuming that there's no way the way that they played against the Seahawks that they would fall to a team with no wins. Granted, they had a new head coach, and that sometimes gives you 1 or 2 week boost, like hydroxychloroquine. And so who knows, maybe the Falcons are better than everyone thought. They had Julio Jones back, but it's basically opened the floodgates for a ton of criticism. It's basically, things are as bad as they've ever been under Zimmer. It's in disarray. Every article is about firing this person, training that person. Let's blow up the team. Let's not do it. I mean, where are you at on things?
Every article that isn't about Sid is about that. Yeah. That's true. That was a bad loss, but, you know, I hate to say this kind of thing because, you know, people, it seems, you know, not, grounded in reality sometimes, but, you know, for me, and it's always been this way, it's a game of emotion. It's, you play once a week, you get beat up on Sunday, and then you know, by Wednesday, you crawl out of the wreckage and try to get back on the field and try to motivate yourself and learn what you're supposed to do and get ready to go again on Sunday. And sometimes you just don't do it as a team. And no matter how fiery your coach is or how good your players are. I thought early, I mean, after, you know, the deflating, you know, Zimmer probably tried to inject some life into his team by taking the ball and putting the offense out there and taking a big strike right out of the gate. And they were almost done after one play, one offensive play. And, you know, you saw how the next series, how the Falcons came out and just were fired up and stopping them behind the line. You know, and they're jumping up and down. It's like, okay, that's the script. You know, they're fired up. They got a new coach. They got a new GM. They got new life. And they're going to play above their heads for a week, and they're going to prove that they deserve to be on the team. Meanwhile, Vikings lost in dispiriting fashion in Seattle in a game they should have won, and limped home on plane flight home and just did not pull themselves out of this hole. How many times have we seen this with this team? And it's probably happened elsewhere along the way. They were done, and I wrote it. I said, this is I wrote it, tweeted earlier, this thing is not going in the right direction. I mean, after two series, the time of possession was already back to where it was the first 2 weeks of the season. I said, this team is done. They, unless they have some kind of miracle turnaround, a defensive turnover that reinvigorates the Vikings squad, this is not going to go well. And it went. Oh, God, it went terribly. So what a ball game. I mean, you said before last week's game, and when we talked to you, that you weren't even sure you wanted to watch him anymore. I said, oh, I want to. And I sat there halfway through and said, God, I think I might agree with Joe. I don't want to watch this. You know,
no.
it was so bad. And, it's a game of emotion. And if you're not up for it and the other team is, it's like slogging uphill through molasses in January to try to get back above them. You have to have something that fires you up, and they gave them life. They gave them, you know, two turnovers right away, and that's all these guys needed. And they were playing downhill for the rest of the game, and the Vikings were they needed some hydroxychloroquine. Is that a new sponsor for Morning Joe?
Yeah, this Russian guy dropped off a briefcase full of rubles, and I figured, why not? Yeah, things are really bad, and we can delve into parts of the game that I guess are worth talking about in a minute. But because of my post-COVID brain fog, I buried the lead, which was, as you so professionally hinted at, in a way only I would pick up with my massive insecurities. You wrote a really great piece. Everyone, like you said, has been writing about Sid Hartman because he touched so many people. In the industry, either through personal experience or reading his stuff. I remember I actually just found this picture on Google image search when I was a sophomore in high school. My sister was a senior at Minneapolis South, and I was on the hockey team. I made varsity my sophomore year, and my sister was on the citywide girls team called the Novas at the time, which I think was what the boys team was named a couple years. I don't know. Anyway, she was considered the consensus best goalie in the state, and so every year the Novas weren't very good. They had like two good players, but they would always get to the game before states because my sister would like save like 80 shots to like 10, but they'd always lose like 1-0. So she would train with us in the summer during our like dry land and skating at Parade Ice Arena, and then go back to the Novas in the winter. And she decided her senior year to play for the boys team, which ended up putting us on the front page of the news Star Tribune sports section with two brothers and a sister that played for Fridley, coincidentally enough, your stomping grounds. And we went down to a couple of different Star Tribune buildings, one to take some pictures and another to answer some questions. And I remember walking by and seeing Sid Hartman on his typewriter and thinking it was like, even back then, it must have been 2001, thinking like, why is he still using a typewriter? And he was just angrily typing something, and he was on the phone and just very boisterous. And that always stuck with me. I thought that was just the coolest thing, seeing Sid Hartman in real life. But that's about as close as I ever got to him. But you wrote a really great story that people, I think, really appreciated and have been consistently reading. And I wanted you to kind of go into your experience is with him.
Oh, well, thanks. Yeah, it was, you know, I'm not writing that much this year. And I was really moved to do something here. You know, after he passed, something that we thought, some of us thought was never going to happen. And I said, you know, as they wrote in the lead, you know, I wanted to know what he died of, because it couldn't have been old age that hadn't gotten him to this point. But the stories that have been coming out have really started to reveal who he is. I mean, I heard Chad, his son, talk on KFAN with Barrero, and Pat Royce's been everywhere talking about him. And in fact, before I go further, you got to read Patrick Royce's column today in the Star Tribune, because he writes it like Sid. He writes in Sid's voice and Sid's style, and with jottings and everything, the same thing. It was inspired. It was hilarious. But anyway, you know, I found out, I realized, here's this guy who's at the top of the sports in this city, and nationally known in many ways, and for decades. And you know, there's a statue of him downtown, and you're wondering why this guy is still cranking stuff out at you know, in his 90s, you know. And yeah. you come to find out that, you know, both Chad said that he's the most competitive person that he's ever met. And he said Royce would, you know, would compete with everybody in town, but he would even compete with his coworkers at the Star Tribune and his son Chad when it came to booking guests on WCCO radio. It's like, you know, if Chad got somebody, Sid had to get him first, you know, for his show. It's like, oh my goodness. Well, it shed new light on an experience I had with him. You know, and I wrote about it in the story where I wrote George Mikan's autobiography for him and with him. And I was talking to people all over the country, you know, but Bill Russell and talked to a bunch of NBA stars, because I was working at the Timberwolves at the time, and Jerry West, and who have all these different people about Mike. And I had to get Sid, because Sid was the GM of the Lakers at the time, and basically brought Mike into town and the Lakers to town. And so I needed to talk to him. He kept putting me off. And, you know, and he finally says, you know, interview everybody else you got to talk to, then come back to me and I'll talk to you. So I, you know, it got to that point where I didn't have anybody left but him. And, you know, I kind of wanted him early so I could get some background on it, you know, but instead he wanted to push me off again. I said, nope, I got to have it. I got to have it now. My deadline's coming up. And he, so he does the interview, and he's, I don't want to say terrible, but he gave me nothing. He didn't want to give any insight into this, you know, the formation of the Lakers. And I would
was it just like one word answers, basically?
It wasn't that bad, no, but it was, you know, he's actually, if you read the book, he's precious, you know, precious few quotes from him, because none of them were great. You know, you wanted something where he gave you a little bit more. I mean, I had the stories from talking to everybody else, and he was basically confirming them. And I said, God, you're the central figure in these stories. I mean, he took Mike, and when Mike came here to possibly sign,
yeah,
he said, famously drove him around town, got lost getting back to the airport, so he'd missed his his plane, had to stay overnight, and then they signed him the next day.
That might be the greatest story ever.
It is, you know, and I wanted Sid to talk about it, and basically, yeah, that's kind of what happened, and it's like, come on, man, give me some. Anyway.
Yeah, you got to get it from his perspective, you know, you can't exactly. Just explain it and say, and Sid added, yes, yeah.
If I'm doing my job, well, anyway, then I meet up with Mike and at the Timberwolves in the media center, and Mike had brought me some books when it came out, and Sid's there, and he comes up and starts talking to us, and he was trying to wheedle his way a book, you know, and I got him under my arm, and I'm still kind of ticked at Sid because, you know, he didn't really help me. So Sid finally says, well, how come that guy gets all those books? And I turned to him, and I didn't hold back. I said, because I wrote it. That was mad, you know, and it was really, you know, I didn't know, hadn't really met him. I'd seen him around, but I was so ticked off that so I said, well, then a little while later, George pulls me aside and said, hey, you know, we got to give Sid a book. And I said, yeah, I know. And so I'd already scrolled him away. I went and got it and gave it to him. But it was, you know, anyway, it took me a while. I was kind of mad because I didn't have him, but as I learned later on, and certainly when all these stories coming out, how competitive it was, I realized that Sid was writing his biography at the same time, or Pat Royce was. So he was holding back because he didn't want to give it all up to me. And, you know, it took me a long time to realize. I said, well, of course. Well, that makes sense. You know, I wouldn't have probably done it either. I wouldn't want to give all the good stuff to some other guy. And so, and as I summed up the article, I said, you know, I told a few other stories about Sid that were kind of less flattering. And I finally said, you know, I realized about him is that he on some level considered me a rival. And, you know, there's less things you can hang your hat in this business on less things than that. So I felt pretty good about that.
Yeah, that's a really cool honor of sorts.
Yeah. I thought so. You know, he didn't come out and say it, but, you know, that's why he wasn't giving me anything, because he didn't want to, you know, because it was like they were months apart when they were released. And I was going, oh, God, why didn't you just tell me that?
There's, like, another level of competition, too, because he just wanted to get more books than, like, you did. Like, you know what I mean? Why does he get all the books? I don't get any. Like, let me get more than him.
Lou Lanny was on the radio talking. I'm sorry, just one thing. Lou Lanny was on the radio talking about how he had a book come out at the same time, and Sid came down when Louis was at Barnes & Noble's having a book signing. Sid goes upstairs, grabs a bunch of his books and brings them down and puts them right on the counter next to Louis so he could get more sales than Louis, one of his great friends. It's like, wow, what a dude.
Yeah, he was working tirelessly up until recently, you know, he still had a column in the paper. He was, I remember when Cousins came here for his press conference, he knew, he must have learned who Sid was and made a joke. I think it was like one of the first things he said. But he was there for that. I mean, it's, just what a towering figure in an industry that is so different now that I wonder if we'll ever have someone like that again.
No chance.
You know?
No chance. Yeah,
you wouldn't think so. I mean, just in terms of everything, but even just that story about getting lost on the way to the airport—that would never happen now.
No. You got Google.
Yeah, you know, and there'd be a limo and a private plane and all of that. So yeah, just what an amazing dude and what a huge impact on everybody.
You know, you thought he never was going to go, You know, when he competed with you, he would tick you off when you're sitting there out in Winter Park grinding for quotes with him. He would make you mad because he got special treatment, which he earned. But he would also take over some of the things that the rest of us were trying to do. And so you'd get a little mad at him. But I thought, you know, I was, when's this guy going to retire? And then I thought, you know, when he does, we're going to miss him. Well, you know, he died with his boots on. My hat's off to him. You know, good for you, Sid. Good on you. What a career and what a legacy you leave here. And it's sad to see him gone, but you know, they're still telling stories and there was, you know, more stories in the paper today about him. So it's phenomenal.
Yeah. I saw something about how resting wasn't an option for him. I think that's a really good way to put it. Cause he was just one of those guys who personality wise or whatever, just never, you know, rested on their laurels and just kept working.
I don't know what drove that. You know, I mean, the way Chad and some others talked, there was, you know, some massive insecurity going on.
Yeah.
Because it sounded like he was going to keep going because he was afraid he was going to lose his job. And it's, man, Sid, I think they'll let you they'll let you write and tell you you don't want to anymore. And he had a column in the paper on his final day, which is totally amazing.
Isn't that, you know, and I know maybe that's, you know, not to be armchair psychologist or something, but maybe that's from growing up when he did. You know, it's that generation went through more than any generation has. And
yeah,
there's a lot of, you know, my grandpa was born in 1912 and he was the type of person who, you know, never wasted anything from, you know, food or whatever.
Right.
It's just,
right.
You know, when you grow up that way.
Children of the Depression. Yeah. My parents, same way. Yeah. And Sid never finished high school. And, you know, he probably saw all these changes coming in and he figured the only way he could keep up and stay ahead was to work harder than everybody else. And
yeah.
Probably something that's always stuck with him. And I can see that, you know, he grew up, his dad was probably, I had heard that he was an alcoholic. And so Sid was out there selling papers at 8 years old to bring money into the family. So it's like those kind of things build up in you and they leave a mark in you that's indelible and that, you know, you never lose. So
he basically worked for the paper almost his entire life.
Yeah. 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 And I should have dropped, you know, the fact to him that I delivered it for 6 years and I had had a desk there for 6 months. I was working on a project, but then they sold the paper and they cut the project, so I was let go. But you know, I should have said, "Hey, Sid, yeah, I'm one of your coworkers at Star Tribune. Cut me a little slack here." But
probably would have added another level of competition to it.
Exactly.
You come to work and your desk's half the size it was before. You just never thought he was gonna be gone, and so he won't be, though. You know, his legacy's out there. There's stories like this, and I gotta read that Royce article. That sounds
funny.
Great. To be honest, that's when you've written for us, I get that vibe from you, the way that your stories are constructed, more so like they just feel a lot more professional than especially my stuff, but the way that they were broken down into game wraps and then, you know, trending, like who's up, who's down, what is improving or what's ending. I got a Sid vibe from a lot of your stuff. So he and I mean that in the best way possible.
Well, thank you. Genius.
But yeah, I mean, one of the sadder things I saw that I didn't really put together on Twitter was a picture of him I think it was Brzezinski might have done it or something. Maybe it was a player for the Vikings. Basically saying, like, sorry that we couldn't win you a championship while you were around. It may have been Brzezinski, but I was like, yeah, man, think about that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
cognizant of this team was cognizant of the team the entire time. And
he helped bring him here. You know?
Yeah.
And he passed away sometime during the game on Sunday. So I mean,
don't blame him.
Certainly a line there to make. I won't make it, but yeah.
Yeah, it's rough. I mean, like I said, there's maybe a few things to talk about in that game. I mean, obviously Justin Jefferson had another great game. 9 catches on 11 targets, I think 166 yards, a pair of touchdowns. He's on pace to have the best rookie season in regards to yards since like the 50s, I believe. He's on pace to beat Randy Moss's rookie record for the team, which is 1,313 yards.
You know, he's never going to do that, though, don't you? Because Randy Moss played for a NFC championship team. Jefferson does not, you know, and they're going to figure out how to shut Jefferson down at some point, maybe put a couple bodies on him as opposed to my guy Adam Thielen, who's on my fantasy team and not doing as well, unfortunately. I just think, yeah, he's been fantastic. Jefferson's been fantastic, and it's great to see. I'm so heartened to see him put him outside and he make plays out there. See the contested catches. He's running good routes. He's making you know, he's shown very good hands. He's and already Cousins has got some trust in him because he seems to look for him quite often. And but I don't see how they can sustain it, you know, on this team because, you know, Moss is on a team with Chris Carter and Jake Reed and Robert Smith, you know, and all these other things, you know. Now, granted, you know, they got a pretty good offense with Thielen and Cook, you know, but they don't have the offensive line that's
exactly
that makes it. So, I mean, it's wonderful. I think you're going to find teams that are watching tape on the Vikings, you know, they're going to probably start focusing on Jefferson a little bit more. And we'll see that maybe change a little bit, but I hope he does, though. It'd be wonderful to see him do it.
You know,
it's really something if you can erase Randy Moss out of the top of the record book
He feels a lot like I've done this multiple times. He looks a lot like Moss to me. You know, I get conflicting measurements on how tall he is. Like Google says 6'1", and then I see 6'3", but he's so lanky that he runs route like that double move that he had. He doesn't look like he's moving that fast, or that he's even in control of his routes. Because I don't know really how to put it. He just looks, his limbs are so long that they kind of look loose and like gummy-ish in a way that he doesn't look like he's running a really tight, great route like Diggs or Thielen does. But clearly, even that double move he had was astounding, and the way that he jumps up over guys.
I don't think he's as fast as Moss.
No way. I mean, nobody really is. But he just has some aspects of Moss's game or aesthetic, rather, that remind me of it. And then you got, obviously, the dynamic between him and Thielen, like Carter and Moss. But no, yeah, nobody got over the top as fast as Moss. I mean, he was super fast. But he's just doing things that saying he was going to make teams that didn't draft him pay. That was very Moss-ish. but the types of catches he's making on the outside, on the inside, across the middle, you know, contested, not contested. It's just, he's been spectacular. And right now he's outside of, what's his face? His former quarterback, probably the front runner for rookie of the year, which is at least something to look forward to. I mean, I think we're at the point in the season where essentially we're going to be looking at tryouts for next year, but like positive things to look forward to, or development of players. I mean, Ezra Cleveland had his first start Sunday, and a lot of people were saying he did a pretty good job. He had like a 43 PFF rating. I just think it's almost like BC Johnson and how people thought he was maybe better than he was because we were used to Treadwell playing. I think people are looking at that game a little bit better than they were just because Samia didn't end up playing. But I don't know if you had a chance to really pay any attention to his game or what he did, but I would be surprised if they go back to Samia at this point.
I don't think he had 4 penalties called on him, so I think that's a good thing.
Isn't that sad? That's the standard.
Right. No, we learned a couple weeks ago that Samia is pretty good at run blocking and terrible at pass blocking, and I didn't feel like, Cleveland stood out as that deficient. He got pushed back a couple times, and but in his first game as a rookie, I thought he did well for himself and warrants another look. You know, it's 2 weeks ago it was terrible to watch. You know, Cleveland. Samia. So I guess by, you know, me not noticing that much, maybe that's a good thing, and hopefully it can improve. And, you know, this team is rebuilding even more so now, so you might as well take a good look at those guys and get them all in there.
Yeah, and there's a lot of articles, dueling articles from the Strib and the Pioneer Press, essentially. This one of them says, Ezra Cleveland, Vikings left tackle of future, makes on-field debut at right guard from a day ago. And then the Pioneer Press one is rookie Ezra Cleveland still the Vikings left tackle of the future? And I know what the team thinks and does is obviously different than what people write. But there's been a lot of people, I think, who have assumed it's a foregone conclusion that he's going to stay at guard because everyone's saying, well, they probably won't be able to tank for Trevor, but they could get a good left tackle Which, right. I, you know, that makes sense on more than that level, I suppose. You know, obviously, if you have a top five pick and you're not looking, if there's not a quarterback who suits your fancy or whatever, then what's the other biggest need on this team? Offensive line. You don't draft a guard three, so
right.
You could either trade down or look for a left tackle to replace Riley Reiff, who's been spectacularly mediocre despite the fact that he's paid a lot of money. I don't really know where to put that. I think it's kind of a very Vikings-ish situation for us to ask that question, because I don't think a lot of teams who draft a guy who is labeled as the future of the tackle position end up moving him to guard in general, or because of injuries or whatever. It just, I fear that that move will screw up the mental aspect of his game and what he was used to doing. But
we all got stars from Remmers and who's the one before that? That the tackle they put into guard and then he's gone.
TJ Clemmings.
That's the other one, yeah. So I'm sure those scars are still here. When you got bodies that are on the IR and can't get on the field, you got to put somebody there. So I'd read somewhere that Cleveland paid guard at least 1 year. I don't know if it was high school or college. So
it must have
like...
been high school, because from what I understand, he never played it in college. But he, you know, he also played for a smaller conference. In college, Mountain West, I think, and it's like he was going against a ton of super big, super athletic guys like you'd get in the SEC or the, what conference are the Gophers in again?
Oh my,
I forget. But I've heard it's the best. and so maybe that was always the plan was, but you know, he also, I mean, people were saying he was Brian O'Neill 2.0 physically in terms of what they saw on tape, and that's a pretty great comparison to make, even though O'Neill's having a down year himself thus far. But you know, it's just, I am so sick of talking about the offensive line, to be completely honest with you. I don't really know what their plan is. I asked Wobby and AJ because they have more team access than I've ever had last week on the 3 Deep with Wobby. Tomorrow night on 3 Deep with Wobby, Bryant McKinney is stopping by. Next week, it's going to be...
That's some offensive tackle talk, then.
There you go. And then next week is Matt Burke.
My goodness.
I know. And then Tice is the week after that, so it's kind of a little offensive line reunion. So I guess I shouldn't be sick of talking about the offensive line. But, yeah, I mean, I just really hope that I don't know. I mean, I've been writing this series of articles because everyone's talking about Zimmer being fired. And you, to be completely honest with you, and I should have put this as a disclaimer on the first part. One of the main things you ingrained in me when I joined Vikings Journal, and then after that from being my mentor in this crazy industry, is to really not call for people's jobs unless it's warranted, or not to do something like, because these are guys with families and lives. And,
yep.
You know, I don't, the only other time that I've, and I'm not even saying they should fire them. I'm just saying these are things that on my, in my opinion, are fireable offenses. And I don't think I'm alone since everyone's writing about it, but the only other time I did that was with Mike Prefer. And that was again, solely based on the field product, and it turns out he spurned the team, strangely enough, after that, which was very true. But you know, the team does pay attention to stuff like this, and so I don't do it lightly either. I remember we had a writer who checked all the negative boxes in terms of what the team was looking for. He didn't use his real name. He used like a Reddit username, and he was calling for the firing of not a Prefer, but the assistant.
Yes.
Special teams coach. And when I talked to the team last year about getting a press pass for camp, after they had kind of put an edict out that no non-traditional media was going to be able to go to camp, he had that article printed out from 6 months prior. And he basically was saying that coach came into his office with the article printed out, and like, he was really upset and said, why, like, this is, I, kind of a hit job, and I like they're calling for my job, and I have mortgage and all this stuff, and they knew like how many clicks the article had gotten, how many comments they had gotten, and how supportive those comments were. Therefore, we had created this mini movement about somebody's job, and
wow.
That really I took responsibility for it because I obviously own the sites and I approved that article at some point. I don't remember doing it. But it's to me, it's not something that I do lightly is my point, and I don't think is done. It should ever be taken lightly. But the first part of that article, the fireball offenses of Zimmer and Spielman, has been the continued lack of investment in the offensive line via, you know, a lot of people are saying, well, the Cousins contract, you know, draft picks cost the same regardless of what position they are now with the way the CBA works. And so, you know, it doesn't take more than maybe a second round pick, but a third, fourth, or fifth round pick to get some depth at the interior. And it just feels like if they didn't learn their lesson with 15 picks in the draft and they ended up taking an actual guard 15th, you know, I just feel like maybe they'll finally get to that point. But this team just feels so disconnected from where it's been. They don't really feel like, you know, Zimmer selling anymore. There's a lot of other problems, but it always comes back to the offensive line to me, and it's just I'm over it. Something needs to change.
Well, you know what you're going to hear from me because you kind of prefaced it. I'm not. You're not going to hear me calling for somebody's head. That's not a decision I have to make, and that's not a decision I want to be part of that decision making process. And there is some. A slight bit of not power, but maybe influence that you just demonstrated by that assistant special teams coach to print out the article and bring it into the PR staff and have it get back to us is not nothing, and I can certainly understand it from that guy's point of view and the Vikings' point of view, and it's something that, you know, having worked in the Timberwolves and really close to a PR staff, I certainly. Understand how real these kind of things are to that department at that organization. So you're not going to hear me say it. I will agree with you as far as Spielman. I mean, over the years, over the past 10 years, I mean, I was calling for the offensive line help a long time ago, and it became the drumbeat since then. Not that I was first one to see it. I'm not saying that, but I have been frustrated because, you know, that's where I thought they were lacking. My dad had always told me this game's won in the trenches, and I've always viewed it from that perspective, and I really saw it happening with this team, and they were too often going after the shiny new toys. But what you just said, for this last year, 15 draft picks, and they don't grab a guard until the seventh round,
and
in
it's
one
the
of their
pick
last.
Before... The pick before Mr. Irrelevant, the second.
Oh my
pick.
Goodness, that is negligence on their part. I don't know what they were going after. I knew they had to rebuild the defense, and I knew they had to get a receiver just to, you know, certainly make up for the loss of Diggs and there are other things, and you know, Zimmer's always said never enough cornerbacks. Well, he didn't have any, so they had to go after a bunch. But it's still. You should have been able to find a decent, you know, maybe at that point they were all the same. I don't know, but I think you want to spend one of the higher ones up on your offensive line, which has struggled. Certainly, since you're going to invest all that money in your quarterback, my goodness, come on.
That's part of it.
A quarterback that needs it perfect around him. You've got to understand that everybody else does. So anyway,
that's the second part of part two of it that I wrote late last night. The Cousins contract, knowing what we know now, but what everyone knew at the time, that he is not good under pressure. I think he's done an admirable job considering, you know, last season he had 26 touchdowns, 6 interceptions.
Last season.
Yeah, against behind the 27th ranked offensive line. I mean, eventually those type of things always catch up with everybody. People get gun shy, even Favre did in 2010. You know, he's the second most accurate quarterback in NFL history by a full percentage point. He's about 0.9% behind Breeze, but he's 0.9% above the third person. And that's
and he's
all.
Really accurate when he's thrown to the other team this year.
Yeah.
Sorry.
You know, that he's not accurate because he dumps the ball off a la Sam Bradford in 2016. He's not accurate solely in garbage time, but he's having a terrible season, and I'm not going to sugarcoat that. But at the same time, you know, he did things the last two seasons that I think he deserves some credit for, considering last season there were points from the entire season, but even when he was mirroring Patrick Mahomes' 2018 season almost identically from weeks four or weeks five to about 12, where he literally could not stand in the pocket. He had to roll out or do bootlegs to move the chains. And, you know, there were games like the Kansas City game where we were harping on Kevin Stefanski for not rolling the ball or rolling him out more, as if that was normal, as if it was like other teams have to flee where the pocket normally would be to complete a pass. And I know that's one of the main reasons that I wanted to have Mike Tice back on the show, outside of, you know, the fact that we promote his podcast for him exclusively, Odds and Ends with Mike Tice, is that he's kind of come out is most recently in talking to Chris Thomason of the Pioneer Press and really questioning the zone blocking scheme that the Vikings have under Kubiak and Rick Dennison, and saying that that is good for the run game, but he still, you know, it's Tice, so he doesn't say things really as directly or negatively as maybe I would, but he still questions, is the way he put it, whether or not it can create a clean pocket or a pocket at all in the passing game. And the Vikings have essentially traded having a good run game for having any semblance of pass protection. And I think that just, I mean, there were a lot of people who, I was up in arms after some of the moves they made this offseason. I know they had salary cap issues, but I'm not surprised Trey Waynes had left because they weren't going to pay him $14.5 million. Xavier Rhodes, obviously. But Linville Joseph, losing him, I thought was bad. And, you know, a lot of people told me I was overreacting until the Josh Klein move. And then there were people who disagreed with me who were like, all right, I officially have no idea what the hell they're doing. You know, Klein was somewhat of a positive influence in the run game, especially, but also in the pass game on the right side. And it felt like, wow, they have a guy who's 27 in Klein, Brian O'Neill. They have Bradbury, who didn't have a great rookie year, but who clearly had potential. And they got rid of that because of his inability to, quote unquote, get to the second level. And it's like, well, Samia can't do anything. Elfline can't do anything. And so just shuffling around bad guys and getting rid of, it just feels like whenever they get some semblance of depth or something, they get rid of it. Alex Boone, I know, was a prick. He came in overweight. But they said they liked that edge when they brought him in. They said they liked that personality, that meanness, that what was Sperano's term? Maulers. They like big maulers like that. And then they draft a guy, or they get some depth, and then they get rid of Boone. It just is, I don't know. You can't run it an offensive line this way. First of all, second of all, you can't, for salary cap reasons, say, okay, well, now we have a different guy, and so instead of having any depth, let's just get rid of the guy behind him because he costs a little bit more than the veteran minimum. You know, you have to have a good offensive line in this league. It's a passing league. You know, we're trying to run the team like it's the 2000 or 1998 Denver Broncos, and it's just not going to work, clearly, because it hasn't. So that's where I'm at with that. I don't think we disagree on
really, well, if
much,
I
much outside of the answers to that question. But to be honest with you, I don't even agree with firing Zimmer, because who would want this job? Cousins is locked in till 2022. There's a lot of confusion about his contracts. A lot of people are saying, well, they can cut him in after the 2021, and the dead cap is only $10 million for him. But his entire 2022 contract is guaranteed after the third day of operations in 2021. So I don't think that is how that works. I mean, it's fully guaranteed. Therefore, if you cut him before 2021, it's $40 million against the cap and dead cap space for next season, and then 10 the season after that. But if you keep him, you can't cut him after that. So
what can I jump in?
Yeah, I mean, I hope so. I really don't know what to do, to be honest.
I want to do a Mike Pence and go back and answer a question, previous question. No, I just want to put one fine point on the whole Zimmer discussion. Is, for me, the whole deal is you don't fire somebody until you know who your replacement is. And mm-hmm. and it looks like right now they left that they let that nice that smart young new hot offensive coordinator slash head coach go to Cleveland. So I don't see anybody who's the next big deal, the next, you know, Shanahan and McVay and, or, you know, all these different guys that, you know, who do they got over in Green Bay, all those guys. I don't see that next guy out there, because that was Stefanski, and he's gone. So I don't think you fire him. I think you let Zimmer boil in the stew, him and Spielman, for the rest of the year, see if they can dig themselves out. If they can't, maybe they'll be so bitter they might want to leave at the end. Who knows? But I don't think you can do that. I don't think it's a wise move. And I think, like I said a week ago, Zimmer builds defenses, and he's already got a defense there's some bright things about, you know, some positive things coming out of these young guys that are getting their chance to play, and they're going to figure it out in a year or two and maybe really be ready to go. Now, granted, the rest of the defense will be much older then, so who knows? But I don't think you can do that. But maybe if you want to go on to Cousins, he had a bad game. Two of those three interceptions are in him. There are two of them. I tweeted as soon as I saw that first play, I said Thielen was open behind him, and that's who the play was designed for. But he didn't even look up at him. And maybe it's because he's panicked about his offensive line. He threw it into double coverage on Jefferson, and Thielen was just streaking. You know, he was gone if he just, you know, puts a little air in it and drops it into him. And that's Cousins. That's what we're going to get. I mean, you know, Zimmer even said it. It's as most frontal as he ever said. Maybe he predetermined some things before snaps that were wrong, and maybe he didn't, you know, look around enough to find who he should have, you know. So for him to say that, you know, I don't know if it's making himself look better or it's what it's doing, but that was kind of interesting to hear him say that. So Kirk is really regressed. And, you know, as we go on to the most improved, or, you know, at least improved, you know, or one who's regressed the most, he's my guy for this year so far, because he was good last year. His stats were good. He led the team to a playoff victory. For most of the season, I thought he was really decent and made me think, yeah, it was okay to re-up him, even though conditionally. But this year, he's gone backwards for whatever reason, and part of it is perhaps getting afraid of that offensive line and not trusting it, even though it's slightly better, I believe, than last year, isn't it?
I can't imagine. I don't know. I mean, Elfline was bad last year, but under Samia, I can't imagine it would be. I know both Samia.
Yeah, but that was just one game, though, wasn't it? Wasn't Samia?
Well, Samia
one...
was bad. Was pretty bad the entire time. Dakota Dozier has been bad.
Yeah, that's true.
Riley Leaf has been okay. Bradbury's been better. Brian O'Neill's been worse, but he's
Bradbury's my most improved.
I would say definitely. That's where I would go to. I think outside of that, there's Irv Smith Jr. has done better the last 2 weeks.
I thought about Eric Wilson, certainly.
I was gonna say, if I was gonna say like the most underappreciated guy, it'd be Eric Wilson, but Bradbury deserves credit for being the most improved. He's done a lot better, especially considering he doesn't have a lot of help on either side of him. He's been
right.
with a lot of double teams and so on and so forth. But no, I can't disagree with you. Cousins has been bad, and sure, he started last season poorly, and he had to apologize.
Hello.
Hello. Can you hear me? Hello.
Ah, you're back there now.
Okay.
What?
Yeah, I can't disagree with you in regards to Cousins. I mean, last season he had to go, what, after week four and apologize on his podcast, and Thielen came on, and they had, you know, we're not mad at each other moment or whatever. But, you know, it's just been terrible, and for whatever, you know, it doesn't really matter at this point. In the context of what I'm saying, you know, elite quarterbacks don't throw three picks in the first half. That just isn't something
No.
that you should have to deal with. And regardless of where that comes from, you know, he's dealt with a bad line before. And so it just feels like yeah, it's going to be rough. I mean, he said it himself. He's not, if he keeps playing the way that he has, if he keeps turning the ball over, he already has like 150% of an increase in terms of his interceptions. He had 6 all of last year. I think he has 10 now, maybe 9. He says he won't finish the season, but again, they're kind of stuck with him. In terms of MVP, I would obviously go with Dalvin Cook. I think we saw the difference between him and Alexander Mattison. I know Zimmer was kind of like, how did he put it? It was strange that we didn't run the ball more, which is a really weird way to put it after the game, because it's like, are you really not cognizant of what your offense is doing, or the impression that gives when you say things?
He said that during the Filippo tournament. It was strange that we didn't run the ball more, or something like that. And I just railed on that back then. You and I talking about it, said, "You're the head coach."
Yeah,
there's a guy have to look, run the ball more.
I have to talk to him. Look at the tape. It's like, aren't you in charge of that? So yeah, I think we both agree with Dalvin. I mean, he's improved himself, and that's saying something, you know.
And he makes that line look even better than it is. You know, I mean, he's got obviously more patience than the sophomore Madison does, you know, which is understandable. And he knows how to set up a block and find the red hole and which can get him to the second level more easily. Madison's a little more straight ahead at this point in his life, you know, get the ball, find the hole, go through it. And, you know, Dalvin is a little more finesse, and I think that makes him a better back. And then get him out there in the second level, he goes. It's fun to watch. I also added a defensive MVP, and I was going to say Kendricks because he's the only one holding it together back.
Yeah, for sure.
It's a sinking ship, and he's out there bailing right, bailing left to get the water out of there.
Yeah, he's everywhere. You know, and I think with Dalvin too, it's. You know, everything goes through him, the play action, the opening up the passing game, so on and so forth. And so it'll be nice to get him back. Hopefully he stays healthy, not solely because I drafted him or I traded for him in our fantasy league about a week ago, which.
But mostly, right?
Yeah.
Not solely, but mostly.
That's why I'm mainly calling for Zimmer's job is for my fantasy team. It's pretty obvious, I think, who the best rookie is. We talked a lot about Jefferson earlier in the show. Who would you put as the worst rookie?
You know, I had, you know, that's a, I'm not a very good moniker because, you know, all of them have played. And I want to say the one who's least used has been Harrison Hand. And the biggest reason he's the worst rookie is because they've already got Anthony Harris and they already got a Harrison Smith. Now he throw a Harrison Hand in there. Who are you talking about? Harrison makes the play, you know? So, he just hasn't been in there enough, and he didn't acquit himself very well last week when he did get a chance, unfortunately. So, but nobody did. So that's the only reason I don't have anybody else to hang it on.
You know, I would say Dantzler, he's been borderline atrocious at times.
And borderline great.
Yeah, and he's shown great. Some flashes, especially recently, but there's been games where every targeted pass his way has been completed. I will give apparently Jeff Gladney is the not just rookie, but the number one run-stopping corner in the NFL right now statistically. So that's worth something. And so we'll see, I mean, how the rest of the season goes. We're at the point where we're looking at 2021, you know, getting these guys experience. I think when they didn't go after Snacks Harrison or Josh Klein, it was kind of a statement by the team saying, this is what we have, this is who we're going to be, and we're going to, you know, power through the season for good or bad to figure out, you know, where we're going in the future. And I think there's obviously some logic to that, and it makes sense, especially when you have 15 draft picks and you're a newly extended head coach and GM. You don't really need to worry about anything beyond that. But one of the main things that we did the last few seasons when you're writing, and that is something I always look forward to, is the bye week haikus. That you've done for our site and for other sites before ours. And I know you had one for this week, and I actually have one too.
Nice. Okay. Well, you want me to go first?
Yeah.
Well, I always set it up by saying a haiku is a Japanese poem that's reversed, that is three lines, five syllables, seven syllables, and five syllables, and it should contain some kind of theme involving the natural world, it to be an official haiku. And we're writing Vikings haikus, so this one goes as follows. Vikings ship on by, stalled mid-ocean, dead water. No land ho in sight.
That's really good. Well,
thank
you. Than mine, and I forgot about the natural part.
That's okay.
So I'll just say that because it refers to me, and I'm a human being of this earth that it counts.
There you go.
Okay, the Vikings are bad. Is it time for a new coach? Guess who told you so? Hey.
Yes, that is that. I can see that coming from you in a heartbeat. You wouldn't even have to put your name on that, and I know what that's from.
I should have.
Is it? Did you answer that question? Do you think it is?
You know, I thought I would do the clickbait thing and just put a question mark at the end of it. Let the readers decide. But to answer that seriously, not right now. I mean, you might as well write out the rest of the season. I mean, Zimmer, if he has one major positive, it's that he can develop guys that he drafts or brings in via free agency, and I think that there's no better person to do that, considering all the youth in the secondary, than him. I also don't really see the difference between firing him, having Kubiak as the interim head coach, and then what, keeping Zimmer Jr. Patterson around. It's the same difference, pretty much.
Yes, and you know, Kubiak doesn't want it anyway. He was so happy being up in the booth, and he'd bail at the end of the year. So I mean, you'd have to get something new anyway.
And you know, and he retired from being a head coach for health reasons. And
right,
this offseason, I think it was this offseason or late last season, they had this article in the paper about how low stress his offensive consultant gig was, and you know how stress-free and happy he was, and so on and so forth. And then, you know, he moves up to offensive coordinator,
you can't fire Zimmer until you've got somebody that you absolutely wants to be here and ready to step in and take the job, because Zimmer is you know, for all his faults, is not incompetent. He's old school. And that might be good or bad these days. I don't know. But I don't think he's lost the locker room yet. I think that defense still plays for him. But it's going to be probably his toughest challenge to finish the rest of this year and find some semblance of a decent record and see what – I don't know. It's going to be bad all the rest of the way out, the way I can see it, starting when they get back from the bye.
Yeah. That's not necessarily it is bad. I'm not going to pretend it isn't, but that could be a good thing in terms of the draft. And I wanted to get your – to end the show, get your take on something that I wrote about 48 hours ago. So there's that former punter, Pat McAfee or whatever, who has that podcast that's super popular. And he came out this week and said that he has a source, and take that with a grain of salt, but let's just assume it's true for the sake of argument, a source from within the Jets that essentially told him that they are actively tanking for Trevor Lawrence. And I wrote that.
Really?
Yeah. And, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if he had a source, because that show is probably the most popular NFL podcast, especially for a new show. It's just getting more and more popular
each week. A punter.
Yeah, he's quite the character. So, you know, people really like him. I think he was on a reality show for a while, too. He's just really funny and really, charming and whatever.
He's trying to take over for Chloe, apparently. But
yeah.
Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. And so my thoughts were that, let's just say, assuming this is true, and I did say, you know, it's a podcast that take a with a grain of salt, because you'd have to be really, really stupid to even leak that in the first place, first of all. Second of all, that would not surprise me either because it's the Jets. But assuming that's true, I said that the NFL should investigate and punish the Jets in some way.
Joe?
What?
Joe, got some breaking news here.
What?
The Vikings trade Yannick Ngakoue to the Baltimore Ravens for undisclosed draft choices.
Are you kidding me?
This came from the Vikings. Yep, I just happened to look as you were talking about some punch.
Are you kidding me?
I am not. So that I was going to consider him being one of the bright spots on this defense, and now he is gone. I wonder if they just thought they couldn't sign him or what.
Are
but
you
yeah,
kidding
it's happened.
Me?
Just came across the wire a couple moments ago. So. Yeah.
Wow. So
put that in your agenda and smoke it.
Oh no. Wow.
Yeah, so I would say the tank is on.
Wow. Yeah, that's a really good what? If they had to have gotten better than what they traded for him.
Yeah, I can't remember what it was. Didn't they
I think
give
it was
a third?
Third and a fifth.
Or was it a second? Because they don't have a second this year.
It was a second, wasn't it?
Yeah. So hopefully they got a second back, and they realized that they're rebuilding, and there's because they probably traded for him still thinking they had a chance because it was the beginning of the season, and they knew they needed to replace both Hunter and Griffin. So maybe they were still thinking, okay, we got a chance, but now they know they're in full rebuild here.
That was one of the things where it's like next season, him and Hunter, it's going to be really exciting, so on and so forth. But maybe his agent essentially came and said, he's not happy here and he's not going to re-sign. So they decided to get what they could. But that
exactly.
is insane.
That's crazy.
Because they had to – they knew where Hunter was at when they traded for him. So
right, correct.
Yeah, it's you're right. The tank is on, but yeah, I'm sure it's sour grapes a little bit if the Jets end up with that pick. But I think that it's really bad for the league from a competitive standpoint. Obviously, if teams are starting to tank for talent,
why are they doing? Are they looking for another quarterback? They're not happy with Darnold. I know there were rumors this week about the Vikings trading for him.
Yeah, I guess that's the thing.
But why would the Vikings do that if they're not sold on him? If he's not their quarterback in the future. That's what the Vikings would want. So why would you trade for him? I wouldn't.
I don't know. And what would they get Cousins in exchange and take on his contract? Or would
right.
None of that makes sense. The only thing that kind of makes sense is San Francisco trading for Cousins, but then we would get Jimmy Garoppolo and his bad contract. So
no thanks.
It's none of it's good. I cannot believe they traded Ngakoue. If they end up getting like a fourth rounder or something, people are going to lose their shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
My stars.
Then you can start screaming at Spielman for that.
I can see it.
Because it was a trade for their defense, and Zimmer is always going to be bullish on that. So if I have to believe that they got, they've got some decent draft picks. I think the Ravens are all in because they can see how the opportunity there is with in the NFC or AFC because. They've already got a great defense. I have them on my fantasy team, and they are great every week. I don't know what their stats are, but I just know that they've been playing good. Now they just added a very good pass rusher. Man, they're going to be even tougher. So, yeah, they're going for the maybe give the Vikings credit that they spotted someone who's wants to win now, sees their window open right now, and they got – it says undisclosed draft picks. So – draft choices, so they got more than one. So hopefully they better be high, because if the Vikings it's the Baltimore Ravens, it's not going to be a high pick. It'll probably be late in the first round, because they're going to do well this year. I think the Ravens have a pretty darn good team.
Yeah, I think Josh Frey does our weekly power rankings, and he has them as number one. For the first time in a while, it feels like the AFC is better than the NFC, doesn't it?
So far, when you got the NFC East, that's got like a pair. Don't have a pair of sticks to rub together to get a pick or to get a win.
5-11 playoff team.
Yeah.
then you know, the Seahawks are maybe the best team, but you know, the Vikings took them to the limit. Their defense is bad. You know, the AFC, you have the Steelers are good, the Titans are good. That's gonna be a great game this weekend.
Yeah.
The Ravens, the Chiefs haven't been spectacular, but they'll figure it out. You know, even the
The Chiefs
Patriots
are gonna be in
the
mix.
Okay.
I tried to tell this to somebody else I was arguing with. Yeah, the Bills are pretty good, but they got exposed last weekend. The Chiefs are going to be in the mix at the end of the year. You're going to have to go through Kansas City to get to the Super Bowl. There's no two ways about it.
I should have brought this up earlier, but does it feel to you in any way that maybe Jefferson is better than Diggs? I know it's early, but it just feels like he's been making catches that we never saw from Diggs, like the over-the-top.
You know, I'm not going to go there yet. I don't think so, because he's still not as reliable going deep. I mean, Diggs, you could count on getting behind the defense and making a spectacular catch down. I mean, he really helped out Cousins, bringing in some passes that might have been out of his radius, and he got to him in the past few years. So I'm not going to go that far yet. I think he can be, but you know, he's still learning the. He's still learning the offense. He's still learning the game. He's just going to get better. The fact that he's doing this already is great, but I'm not going to say he's better than Diggs. I just can't.
Yeah, he has the potential, though.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
But yeah, I cannot believe they traded Ngakoue. I thought you were messing
Breaking with news on MJ's, baby.
That's how we do it. And you know, it's funny because we were this close to ending the show, and it's always been our thing where we end the show and 10 minutes later something huge happens.
Right.
And so it's, wow, it blows my mind. So I guess stay tuned to Vikings Territory. The article's already up on there, thanks to Brady Vernon, one of our new guys, which is really cool. I'll write a reaction piece that's just a all caps what question mark exclamation point on Purple PTSD. And thanks, everyone, for tuning in. Check out manscaped.com. Use the discount code MorningJoes, all one word, and you get 20% off and free shipping on your next order, which is pretty cool. Check out the show that I just started doing with Wabi, 3 Deep with Wabi. We're going to be live tomorrow night at 8 p.m. with Brian McKinney. If you have any fan questions, I'm going to put that out there on Twitter. Questions for Mr. McKinney or for Mr. Matt Burke. We will answer those this week and next week. But this has been Morning Joes for the 22nd of October. We'll catch you guys next week. Skull.
Seriously, who's blowing up my phone?
Oh, yeah. Powerball.
Big news. Powerball now draws 3 days a week, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Saturdays. Play now.
Please play responsibly. Must be 18 years or older to purchase player claim.
Me, 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 but also you. The Pharaoh fast forwards his favorite foreign film, Powder Donut. Okay, what's my line?
The only line I see here on the script is get options based on your budget with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive.
Oh man, that's a tongue twister, huh? I'm sorry, I'm going to need a few more minutes. Bulbous Walrus, the Bulbous Walrus.
The Name Your Price tool, only from Progressive.
The owl ran afoul of the comatose coxswain.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.